Compare the 6 days of the book of Genesis to the 4 billion years of geologic time. On this scale, 1 day equals about 666 million years. All day Monday until Tuesday noon, creation was busy getting the earth going. Life began on Tuesday noon, and the beautiful organic wholeness of it developed over the next 4 days. At 4 p.m. Saturday, the big reptiles came. 5 hours later, when the redwoods appeared, there were no more big reptiles. At 3 minutes before midnight, man appeared. 1/4 of a second before midnight, Christ arrived. At 1/40 of a second before midnight, the Industrial Revolution began. We are surrounded by people who think that what we have been doing for 1/40 of a second can go on indefinitely. They are considered normal, but they are stark, raving mad.
Majesty filled with gold.
Go forth, children, multiply, fill the earth, and subdue it.
And we shall be the place where the Lord will create a new heaven.
The final victory of man's machinery over nature's materials is the next logical process in evolution.
But man is a part of nature, and his war against nature is inevitably a war against himself.
Thank you. Not only have we failed to realize we are one people, we have forgotten that we have only one planet.
I looked below me, where the earth was silent in sick green light. And saw the hills look up, afraid. And all the animals. And everywhere about me were the cries of frightened birds and the sounds of fleeing wings. Then I was standing on the highest mountain of them all, and round about beneath me was the whole hoop of the world. I saw more than I can tell, and I understood more than I saw. For I was seeing in a sacred manner the shapes of all things in the spirit. And the shape of all shapes, as they must live together like one being.
Like Alfred said, yeah, it wasn't Pope. Alfred, we met the enemy. What are your reactions? Gloom and doom? Reality? How do you feel about it?
How can we change that after a while? Destruction.
That is the question, isn't it? No one thing that we intend to end tomorrow on a positive note. You'll notice the word hope in the title.
I think that, I mean, if you want to get something out of this, you assume that everything that comes along seems like it's great at the time, and then you realize as you go further into it that there's stuff you've never thought of. But you still see that going on. For example, I was reading an article yesterday about genetic altering of tomatoes, but it didn't present the other side to it. It was just typical Reader's Digest stuff. This is going to be the greatest thing. We're finally going to have tomatoes that taste good again. But there is another side to it, too, see. So, you know, a lot of people still haven't accepted that there's a bad side to a lot of things you've got to consider.
That's right.
Sometimes when I see those, they are very sobering and depressing, but the other part that is encouraging is the creative genius of humans, if that could be directed.
It's a good thought. It's two things. It's the creative genius of humans. It's the creative genius of humans that made many of the problems
that
contain the solutions.
Right.
It's also the resilience of the natural world, you know, which in an area I have more knowledge. And, for example, New York State has more standing timber today than it did at the turn of the century. You know, and yeah, I could go on and on and on. You can make a positive of history as well as you can make a negative, but this is still reality. It's reality from one viewpoint. I'll give you a social side to this. It's a reality, and you don't read it in the owl versus timber industry, because timber industry is a human and social segment of our society. Timber industry doesn't describe it. The word industry doesn't describe it at all. It's not Weyerhaeuser and Louisiana Pacific. You know who the people are that are represented in the Northwest by that phrase, and whose jobs and lives and culture is at stake in the great debate that's going on over the future of forest stewardship? They're the descendants of the people in Appalachia, in the oil fields, so-called Okies and Arkies, in the Dust Bowl. That's who the population from Northern California, mill towns, to Canada, that's who they are. You go to Darrington, in some cases they're almost exclusively from one of those regions, and Darrington, of course, is North Carolinians. And on the Oregon coast, in most of the mill towns and the people I knew so well, they're descendants directly from either Oklahoma or Arkansas. And so, you know, yeah, that's the sobering and honest side of that whole debate. It's not a debate about cutting trees and making wilderness. It's a debate about a change in our culture and perfecting the way in which we do that. I can tell you right now that none of those corporations in my 35-year association with them had any concern about their employees. They've been cut and get in every town I've been in. Every single town that I've worked in or been associated with in the Forest Service has had a mill close long before the current debate. So, you know, I think that we have to dig very deeply into the humanity that in the social structure and economic structure that we're really talking about. Because therein, to me, lies the solution. It's all in our hands. It's not in Sahara Club's hands, or, as I say, Sierra Club's hands, or any other representation of us. It's us. See, look at the consumerism that was in there. What else?
Well, it's difficult to produce a video without and produce one which is balanced.
Sure.
And this is certainly not, in my view, one of those. It has two things which I saw. One is it doesn't show the full spectrum of man's presence in the 20th century. It doesn't speak anything about the medical improvements, the increased lifespan, which are direct spin-offs of some of the technology. And it doesn't, you know, I think the point has to be made from the Bible that man has a sinful nature, and given the opportunity, he will manifest that. So the challenge in this century, I don't think it's any different than it was 1,000 years ago. It's just that our tools for destruction are better.
But our level of knowledge is greater.
Our level of knowledge...
It is greater.
Maybe.
Oh, I think so.
Our technology is better. I don't know what our level of knowledge is.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't talk about technology. I'm, you know, okay, again, I'll think in my own field. I'm a member of the curriculum committee at Oregon State School of Forestry, and I made a rather unpopular speech to them when I accepted that assignment, but now they all seem to have accepted it. I titled that speech, The Tenets of Forestry, taught to me here 30 years ago that became the myths of forestry in that time. Nice long title, but described what happened. Almost nothing that we believed as forestry science 35 years ago exists today as accepted science. And, you know, in our midst now are the ecologists and the biologists and the soil scientists and on it goes that were not available to me, you know, when I was cutting your forest 35 years ago. Yeah, level of knowledge, I think, is vastly, vastly greater in basic science. I'm not talking about technology. It is also in technology. And therein lies hope also. That's how we can change. We can change when we know we're wrong. We thought we were right. What else?
Well, I admit to being a traditional Christian, and while I share some of the concerns about what's going on, as I tell people when things like this come up, whether it's war, race problems, I'm glad I'm a Christian. And that's my hope.
What percent of the world is Christian? Anybody know? I mean, that's not a rhetorical question. I'm looking for information. Anybody have any idea what percent of the world population is Christian? Believes in Christ? I mean, I couldn't even hazard a guess. For me, it could be to 1 to 99. The reason I asked the question, of course, is if you really heard Rachel Carson and most particularly Jacques Cousteau's message, you know, it is obvious now to all of us in all things, and you can just stick to stock market if you wanted in economics, but in everything, environmentally, socially, everything, we are connected. It's so evident now. And, you know, it's the truth. But what about in religion? Because truly in our respect for the Creator, without any other label, and those of us who are the descendants of the creation of humanity, lies the answer. But we are more fragmented, probably religiously, in religious organization and religious beliefs, than we are any other way. And since I have no allegiance to any, but do certainly am a Christian, that, I think, is the solution that must happen, and it's the one that was called for by the, at that time, head of the United Nations in the passage that's on here, is the connectedness from the standpoint of people that believe in a God and worship a God must unite in the solution. I don't think I see that happening. That, to me, is the most distressing of our situations. Most war being fought on this planet today is being fought under the conflict of people with different persuasions in religion.
I think about an idea of the group. That is, those people who are in power, regardless of the system, when there is pressure to change, their response is inevitably, just think about this in terms of systems, you know,
mm-hmm.
inevitably, well, let's take a balance of
those. Oh, certainly.
And I think that we live in a time where things are in rapid change and where the ecosystem as a whole is under pressure. And that those who are in power inevitably say, well, let's balance jobs. And my guess is that the church, as it seeks to be faithful, will probably have to say, you know what? We can't do that. We have to opt for justice, which means that in the eyes of many, we will be quote unquote unbalanced.
Yeah, I.
That's why David Brower's quote is so appropriate.
Yeah, David Brower has more or less separated himself from membership in any organization so that he can speak with his personal freedom. I greatly respect him for that, because most of the environmental organizations, the label, really have started to become, like all of all they become institutionalized, therefore their own survival is their objective, more than the noble objectives that they once subscribed to. That's my observation. People like David Brower are recognizing that. And to me, that's what we need, leadership. We don't need organizations that lead. And I agree with you. When I've talked to some of you, my description of what is going on in the Forest Service today is revolution. It is revolutionary change. It is not evolutionary change in any sense. And there's an enormous tug and pull, and it's cross-generational. There are some at my age that are a part of it on what we believe to be the right side. And there are resistors still being hired that still think the mission of management of your forest is essentially timber harvest. They're still being produced by forestry schools somewhere. And so I agree. It's not a time to find a soft compromise that keeps everybody happy. It's not going to work. But it must acknowledge we're dealing with human life and cultures and all the rest. Yes, Darrington, by the way, is doing quite well at reorienting itself. See, I'm not at all saying we ought to keep feeding the mill logs because they're second-time losers. All I'm saying is you have to feel for them. You have to feel how they feel in this, because they were doing that honest, hard work that we all want done for us, so that we can be in wooden structures. And hard and dangerous work. And they did hard and dangerous, their ancestors did hard and dangerous work and produced the wheat for the First World War. You know, and so we have to get the people back into the solution, not corporations and lobby groups.
So you're saying that there needs to still be a balance?
We have to find equilibrium. I'm very inclined to agree with you. It's not balance. We're not going to come from two poles to the center. We do have to find equilibrium. We have to find, I do a whole session, the Elder Hostel-like title, A Search for Compatibility. We have to find compatibility. And that may mean moving 90% away from consumerism, not 50%. It may mean moving 100% closer to a moral, spiritual, and religious commitment, personal commitment. Consumers control this nation and this world. They're the only source of revenue. Their government has no money. Corporations have no money. Only consumers. But, of course, we're as fragmented as we could be. Fragmentation won't do it. Why didn't I have a place on the teaching staff here until about 7 years ago, maybe 8? Because this community was not discussing the things that I could contribute. This Christian community did not have on its agenda a significant education and discussion area in the summer teaching program until about 8 years ago. And so, you know, we've just begun to address it.